Welcome to episode 38 of the Virtual Velo Podcast. A very special podcast show today because I've flown over the water, over the pond, as they say, and over a big expanse of the US as well to get to the west coast of the US because, of course, I am today in LA and I have the pleasure of sitting across for the first time in the flesh, in 3D, face-to-face with co-host Chris Schwenke. How are we doing, Chris?
So it's really been great meeting you, Si, I must say. And, you know, this podcast is going to go into Virtual Velo podcast history. It's the first in-person podcast. You know, it's really been great. I know I joked around during the last podcast that I was afraid that I wasn't going to like you, but that fear has not been realized. It's just like a couple of old friends that have known each other forever. And it's really nice to be able to be kicking around a whole bunch of views and thoughts and our perspectives on things without having to, get onto a video call.
Well, we've been out for a ride today as well. And we've been out on the real roads of what we believe is where Watopia was modeled on. Because, of course, we also had a guest join us on the ride today, which was fantastic. Someone who is also extremely knowledgeable on cycling at esports, having, you know, the unique position, I guess, of, well, working for Zwift, first of all, working for MyWoosh, and now involved with the UCI as well in his role really into cycling esports. So we had the pleasure of Jacob Fraser with us today.
Yeah, Jacob is very knowledgeable about the cycling esports and the evolution. He was there basically from the beginning with Zwift. I think that he was instrumental in, you know, the force behind the first like live event that they did. So he has a lot of knowledge there for live events, and that's going to come in handy for the Worlds this year, right? They're going to be in Abu Dhabi. But just, you know, being able to speak to him about his perspective and his views and where he sees esports going in the future was pretty cool. And he also gave us some pretty cool history about the fact that the roads that we were climbing, the climbs, the hills, which was a very hilly, pretty challenging ride that we did. And it was great being able to do it alongside you. One of the climbs that we did was actually the inspiration for the Watopia KOM.
Yeah, the Zwift KOM, right? So I think he said that Watopia was modeled on Long Beach, where the Zwift office is, of course, in the climb. I don't know if you can remember the name of the climb today.
No, it was PV, right? Palo Verdes, something like that. I'm tough with these names, but all I know is that it was beautiful. We were riding, right along the coast and had a panoramic view of LA and the ocean. It was just spectacular.
Yeah. Now, of course, obviously, I'm in LA because I'm here on business with my 9-to-5 job in the fitness industry. But we've extended the trip. I've extended the trip. You've also flown 4 or 5 hours to get to LA from your usual home in Long Island and just off New York there. But of course, we also did plan to meet with Zwift. And it's just a coincidence that, of course, the Zwift game's going on right now. But also, we know from what we've heard from Zwift that some very high-level board meetings are going on as they approach the start of their new financial year. And a lot has happened with Zwift, with the staff changes in the last year. Of course, also the announcement that they were no longer going to be hosting the UCI World Championship. So I imagine there's going to be some heated debate in that boardroom this week.
Yeah, I think there was some sensitive stuff going on there, and that's the reason why we were told that we were unable to have a bit of time with them or get a tour of the headquarters. You know, let's face it, they're going through a bit of a transition with some, you know, the unfortunate layoffs of a lot of really great people. So I know that they're trying to sort through all of that also. So, you know, it's these things don't always work out the way that you want them to work out. But, you know, we're here and we're making the most of it. And we have a great guest on today that we're going to be able to speak to. He's pretty high profile guy, and I'm looking forward to speaking to him. And, you know, just the opportunity to get to speak to you and shake your hand is worth the trip.
No, absolutely. It was fantastic to meet you for the first time yesterday face to face. So our guest is going to be Brian Duffy Jr., of course, of Next, powered by Ensure Elite Esports team. So we're going to be chatting about a little bit about Brian's background. We're going to be talking about the Zwift Games because that is going on right now, of course, and we've just finished up round one, which is, I guess, is the sprint championships of the Zwift Games, not without its controversy. So we'll have a little bit of chat about that with Brian, but I think also you and I will have a little bit of chat about what's happening there as well. And then we're leading into the Epic Championships. And of course, there's still lots of questions there of, it'd be interesting to see how these broadcasts play out in terms, not just in terms of the engagement with the community, but also in terms of format as well. Because in theory, is this the answer or is this the response from Zwift because they lost the UCI World Championships?
Yeah, you know, we had the opportunity to meet with Sean Parry, who is the, you know, he's now, he said he's the head of esports at Zwift now. And he was very open with us as far as, you know, this is their, you know, this is their world championships. This is their response to that. And they want to hit it, you know, hit a home run with this. So you could see a lot in what they've done, right? The rebranding. I look at the black and gold and it's really sharp. And I'm saying to myself, that's their rainbow stripes, right? Everything is rebranded that way now. It looks great. You know, the sprint race format looks just like the world championships also, didn't it, Si?
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, and I think there was a lot of positives that I saw from the Zwift Games in terms of bringing athletes in, you know, into that commentary, bringing in part of that that show. I thought was a really positive aspect. There's still a few questions for me. And also, you know, I'll be open. I spoke to a lot of those elite athletes about that sprint format and why the format, you know, had so many climbs in. And essentially, let's be honest, it was three scratch races. There wasn't a lot unique, which I think is a bit of a missed opportunity from my side, given what we'd seen in the past with the Zwift Grand Prix, for example, and some of those. And I know some of those formats weren't overly liked with some of the elite races there, but I do think it was an opportunity to mix things up and just progress that format a little bit. But, you know, it was a great finale in the sprint final with Kaminsky hitting the numbers that he did in that final sprint and getting that gap. So certainly that final race was very interesting. But it'd be really interesting to talk to Brian Duffy Jr. about that. So let's not waste time. Let's get Brian into the room and talk about his background and then the Zwift Games. All right. It is my pleasure to welcome to the show Brian Duffy Jr. of Next Powered by Insured Cycling Esports Team. Is that the right title, Brian, for you and the team?
It's close. Presented by, I think, is the official presented for PB.
By. Presented by. I get it. I need to get that right for next time. Well, Brian, thank you, first of all, coming on to the show. I know you're over on the East Coast in the US somewhere, right?
That's right, Philadelphia area.
Okay, so I'm over on the West Coast. My geography knowledge of the US is getting a bit better, Chris.
I've noticed that. I know you got turned around a couple of times. I had to point you in the right direction today, but I have obviously live on the East Coast, and Brian is within a decent car ride. First, I'd like to hear about his triathlon days, the early days of endurance for you.
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. Really excited to be on here. Maybe even before the triathlon days, just growing up, I was like one of your classic multi-sport athletes. I loved the ball sports, basketball, baseball, all those. But then I quickly realized that I was not going to be that tall. I'm only like 5'8", and I'm not really that big. So found endurance sports. I did grow up swimming. And then in freshman year of high school is when I really started pursuing running. Quickly realized I was decent at that, at least better than, you know, your traditional team sports. And then subsequently lost all my eye-hand coordination. But it's okay because I love the endurance sports. My first triathlon was actually after my freshman year of high school. So it was pretty early on by triathlon standards. It's an older sport, especially back then. I think 2003 was the year I did my first race. But was really winging it at the time. So throughout high school, I would run in the spring and the fall, swim in the winter, and then do triathlons in the summer. So cycling was the last discipline that I added. I did it very recreationally in those days. And then when I went to college, I went to Duke University in North Carolina. I initially actually walked onto the track and cross country team. Did that for about a year, and then I decided, hey, I really want to pursue triathlon. I loved balancing the three sports. I wasn't amazing in any one of the disciplines, but I was good when you aggregated them all together. And I actually founded the Duke Triathlon Club while I was a student there, which was probably one of the highlights of my undergrad days. It was really fun to bring a lot of different parts of the university together because it wasn't just an undergraduate program. There were law school students, medical students, faculty. There was just a lot of pent-up demand for the sport. And that's when I started training all year round for triathlon. And, you know, my career really took off from there.
So that was really a progress into professional sport then. You were a professional triathlete, right?
No, I raced as an age grouper, I would say, at that time. Shortly after I graduated college, I won the, amateur national championship, you can call it, for the Olympic distance, which is like the intermediate distance. I got second at the amateur world championship over in London in 2013. Olympic distance was always my sweet spot. It was about a 2-hour race. toward the end of my career, 2016 and 2019, I raced as a quote unquote professional. For me, it was always a hobby. I was doing it part time in addition to either full time school or full time working. But it was really fun those last few years competing against the likes of Christian Blumenfeld, Alistair Brownlee, and some of the top triathletes around the world. I mean, I wasn't in their league, but they're just on a different level. But I was pretty proud. I was able to hang somewhat. And you know, it was a lot of fun.
It always amazes me the level of character and the level of professionalism of the athletes, you know, especially a lot of the esports athletes. And you know, when you speak about your education and your professional life, you went to the Wharton School of Business at UPenn, is that correct?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah, so that's pretty big time, Cy, if you don't know. I think it's one of the top right business schools in the country, if not in the world. And you're working over at the university now still?
No. So business school was probably my favorite 2 years of my life. It was just an incredible experience. I learned so much from the professors, from my classmates. But this current week, it just so happens I'm doing a conference called the Securities Industry Institute, and it's a week long conference at Wharton, and it's fun because I'm basically taking classes, four 90-minute classes a day for a week. And it's like I'm back in business school again. It's a 3-year program. So this is my third year. I've been doing it every March for a week the last few years. I even have some of my old professors, so it's fun to kind of reconnect with them.
Yeah, that's cool. It's kind of like being back in business school without the stress of having to make a grade.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no tests or quizzes.
Good for you. So when did you then transition to esports, and what was the evolution like there?
Yeah, so I first started Zwifting, I would say, in 2017, but I was doing it as a training platform for triathlon. Prior to that, I was a heavy Compi trainer user, I think since like 2009, but I would just stare at the wall. They didn't really have the software to go with it. But I never tried Zwift racing. That wasn't until 2020, like everybody else. March 30th was the first day I did a race. Mike Egan kept nudging me to get on and give it a shot. I was planning to take 2020 off from triathlon regardless. I had been racing for about 16 plus years at that point, 100 plus races, started to get a little bit burnt out. So I was planning to take the year off regardless. And then the COVID pandemic occurred and that kind of forced my hand anyways. So I needed to get my racing fix in. I love racing. I love being competitive. And I was like, well, this is convenient. You can do it in the comfort of your basement. So I did a Crit City race. I got dropped after a few laps, but I was hooked. Raced again the next day, the day after. I think I raced almost every day for a couple months. That was the start of my e-cycling career.
There's two things there about you, Brian. First of all, and I want to get into this in a bit more detail, but you're one of the coolest looking guys when you ride your bike indoor on your trainer that I've ever seen. You've got quite a unique style, I would say, but let me come on to that in a minute. The other thing, because obviously I talked to Greg, who founded Next with you, he said you're one of the most focused athletes he knows. You know, and I think I've spoken to a few of your teammates, and they all say the same thing. But when you got onto Zwift, but when did that real drive and focus come in? You knew that you could take this to another level.
It took a little while. When I first got on, my initial goal was to be Zwift power rankings were a big thing back then. They've become a little diluted since then. But back then I was like, wow, I would really look up to those who were toward the top. My goal was to break top 100. And I was like, that would be amazing if I could crack the top 100. Because I was an aerobic athlete. I did all time trialing. That was everything I trained for. Very regimented, very structured. I couldn't sprint. When I first started Zwifting, my cadence was very high because that was how I rode in triathlon. Like, I mean, not high, it was just like normal in the 90s. Seated for most of the time. I couldn't sprint. I couldn't get over 700 watts. But you know, slowly but surely, you know, my body kind of went through this metamorphosis of sorts, a transition, which was a lot of fun for me because I had been training the same way for so many years. And all of a sudden I was like, wow, different skill set, a different energy systems required to be successful here. And I would say September of 2020. So maybe it's a 6 months in at this point. I remember I had a breakthrough race. I think I won my first somewhat meaningful race. I think I was cracked the top 100 or whatever. And then it was later that winter where I all of a sudden accelerated toward the upper tier. And But throughout all that time, I was learning how to sprint. I was learning how to be more punchy. And then I was importantly, I was learning the game craft as well.
So I've noticed after watching you that you have a very unique style. You're out of the saddle for long periods of time, if not every time that we ever see you on screen. I was watching your cadence during the races, during the sprint races, and they vary between 50 and 60 RPMs, but never usually higher than that. And you say that when you started, you were a normal athlete, normal spinning at 90 RPMs, which is, basically normal or a normal athlete. How did that click in your mind that esports needed to be a different physiological system? And how did you actually train for that?
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting question because I do get it asked a lot because it is the distinct style and it stands out. But honestly, it was not that intentional. It wasn't like I started and I was like, wow, if I ride at 50 RPM, I can be way better. No, it's just I just naturally gravitated toward like an optimization of sorts. And just given my physiological, makeup, and I think how I could ride the best, I just found myself naturally riding at a higher and higher resistance, higher torque. It just seemed more comfortable for me. It was easier for me to generate power when I had higher resistance, but it took time. It wasn't like I could do that overnight. My legs had to strengthen. So I would say it was kind of like an organic evolution. It wasn't really something that I set out to do.
But when you say it was an organic evolution, was it that because the physiological feeling, or were you seeing something in the numbers which drove you in that direction?
It's a good question. I would say it was more so the feeling. There was just something about having like just the torque being applied to my pedal stroke that just seemed like it enabled me to be more powerful and more punchy. And I think the numbers supported it for sure. The results supported it. But I think that was more the order of operations as opposed to the other way around.
So we spoke about how focused you are, and you've determined that this riding style is what works for you. So is your training focused? Do you do intervals standing for a certain period of time? Do you try to hit torque numbers rather than power numbers? I want to know what your secret is, Brian. Please tell us all.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it's not going to be that enlightening. But one of the things that I love about Zwift and e-cycling, especially coming from my past life, where I was a triathlete for many years and lived a very regimented and structured life, balancing three different sports, is it's a lot more flexible. And because it's only one sport and the races are only 20 to 30 minutes, you don't have to put a ton of time, like all the volume. I'm not doing stage races outside that are 4 or 5 plus hours. I'm doing these 20 to 30 to 40 minute races. So, and importantly, I'm just doing it because I want to have fun. I love racing and I want to have fun. So I don't do too many structured interval workouts like I used to do. I use a lot of racing essentially as a stand-in for my workouts because they're more fun and I like waking up and jumping in a race. But I will approach the races differently. To try to test different strategies or energy systems, and a little bit has morphed based on the trainer I'm using. For whatever reason, when I would use the Saris trainer, I could sprint, I could get my power up, not because the trainer was overreading, like my secondary device would be higher, but it's something about the flywheel and the way that the resistance was applied. So I relied much more on my sprint back then. But on the kicker, I relied much more on just strength, repeated efforts, longer breakaways. And so I just kind of, will race in different manners depending on what system I'm trying to simulate. So some days I'll just want to be in a breakaway. Some days I'll sit in for the sprint. Some days I'll just keep attacking over and over again. Because with little community races, like the results aren't all that important. You can take risks and just use it more so as a workout. One of the interesting things, though, is I do jump in the summer. I'll jump into some crits and local crits and things of nature outside. And when I ride there, my cadence is back up to 90 RPM. So it's just something about the environment in which you're in and like because there I have to be like much more responsive to the people around me. So I'm just riding at a higher cadence.
It's really interesting you say that though, because obviously crits is also, about being punchy out of the corners and so on. So you do a lot of volume and a lot of work on Zwift. Has this really helped your crit racing as well?
There's certainly a correlation. I think some people overestimate the degree of correlation between outdoor riding and e-cycling. I think they hope that there's a tighter correlation. But at the end of the day, aerodynamics don't matter indoors. It's all about power. And it has its own craft. It does take time to learn how to ride effectively on the different platforms. And Zwift is different than MyWoosh, which is different than others. Obviously, if you're racing or riding outdoors, those have very different dynamics at play, even a crit between a road race. So there's certainly a correlation, but it's certainly helped me in various ways. But they all require their own focus and time to really get good at.
Well, I think it's been interesting to talk to you about your evolution as you as an athlete. I want to talk about how that morphed into the US Nationals, because that wasn't a punchy sprint finish necessarily. You know, you showed your strength on that climb and all sorts. But just before we dive into that, I want to ask you about Next and your involvement in the early days, and just give us a little bit of insight on how that came about. And, you know, because obviously you didn't come on until 2020. So what was your involvement in that?
Next was certainly the highlight of my e-cycling career. It's been so much fun to be a part of this team and to help lead this team. But it was December of 2020. Myself and a couple others decided, hey, we wanted to start our own team. We really wanted to get into what was called at the time the Premier Division within the Zwift Racing League. And it was tough to find an avenue to get there. I remember I was very envious, kind of looking from the outside at all the different riders. We didn't know what our name was going to be. We had this other temporary name called Rule 5. And one of the individuals, Scott Cananzaro, who we started with, he's from D.C. And we were looking, we didn't have a vision. We didn't know where we were going. We didn't know any other riders. We didn't have a lot of credibility at that point. He connected us with Greg Abbott and a whole group of his friends. They had started this team called the Meme Team, which in retrospect is really funny. They're a bunch of jokesters, and I'm like this ultra competitor or competitive and serious or aspiring serious e-racer. And so on the surface, it's an odd pairing. He and I joke about it a lot. It's real different in a lot of ways. But he had a vision, and he knew where he wanted to go bring a team and where e-cycling was going. And we decided to merge forces. Ashton Lambie was actually a part of the Meme Team at the time, so he came on board, which is a lot of fun. And then we just slowly start recruiting people. Like, we're like, hey, Zach Nair, you want to join the team? You look like a decent athlete. And a handful of others. And the team just kind of emerged. We worked with Cutaway down in Virginia. They do custom apparel. They designed our logo. This was like January of 2021. And it really embraced the gamer side, which we thought was cool. Not many teams were doing it at the time. They were trying to come off as more like your traditional outdoor road team. We're like, no, let's go with like the 90s pixel Nintendo theme. And, we just had a vision of where we wanted to go. And it's been history ever since. But it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think it's certainly one of the number one standout team there. And it's really clear, I think, to us as commentators, fans of the sport, that, you guys have really changed the dynamics of what a team means in cycling esports. And I think that was really demonstrated in the U.S. Cycling Esports Nationals. I already mentioned there that your individual performance, both as a punchy athlete but also the way you took on that climb there in Italy, just give us a bit of background about how that race went and what that race meant to you.
Well, it was incredible. I remember since I started racing, I've been hoping for a USA Cycling sanctioned event on Zwift, and they kind of, I don't know all the background dynamics of what was going on there, but it wasn't until 2024 that finally happened. So when I saw it on the calendar, that immediately became my priority, or at least one of my priorities for the year, probably the top priority. And being a part of the team though is amazing. Just on our Discord every day, people are so supportive, so encouraging, pushing each other, so positive, and it's just great being in that environment and around those types of athletes. But as we headed into this race, it was a unique format, three different races, all about 20 to 30 minutes apart, two scratch races, one individual time trial, which are pretty rare. I don't even know if I'd ever done one before prior to this. And then ultimately it was an Omnium, so it was, you know, points. Heading into the race, you know, we certainly scouted the courses. I actually did a decent amount of prep for the individual time trial because I was terrified of it. And I had never done that Italy course. And it's so unique because the first 6K is flat. The last 2K is all uphill and the time distribution is roughly equal. And, you know, the way the physics works is you want to be going hardest when you're going slowest. So I was actually doing a decent amount of pacing work to try to figure out how to optimize. And I think we were running some math calculations on the back end, just kind of figure out based on the average you think you can hold for 14 minutes, what's the best way to kind of asymmetrically balance it out between the two. So, but I think the intent from a team standpoint was, for race one, we had a few guys who, hey, they had kind of raised their hand and volunteered. They're like, hey, I know that I'm probably not going to be a contender overall, but my loyalties lie with the team and we want to help set the team up for success. And I think there was a few of us who we thought had a decent shot of podiuming or winning. So a few of those guys from race one were just, hey, we're on catch and kill duty. If someone's gone off the front, or hey, we'll kind of, you know, crank the pace a little bit toward the end if that's the strategy that you all want. So that was incredibly effective because certainly in race one, Saris, I believe, was being very aggressive, as we expected them to be. And we knew the drill. We had like three or four guys who were just like, hey, we're going to rotate and take turns, just kind of bringing the peloton back. Because ultimately for race one, we just wanted it to come down to a pack finish, because we believe that of our contenders, especially in Richmond, where it's a flat sprint, but it comes right after your governor shoot, which is a kind of a long climb. Yeah, I think that certainly suited me well and others. It's a strength sprint. So that's what we wanted. We didn't want there to be breakaways that favored, you know, randomness or luck. So when it got to that point, we were in the position that we needed. And I was fortunately able to come around Neil Friette there at the end to take the win on the first race. Then it was just recovery, get ready for race two. Again, I was terrified. I didn't know how that race was going to pan out. And I think it was a great example of just going into race mode. Yeah, I remember we got through the flat section exactly on the wattage that I wanted to hit, like 350-something watts, and we get to the climb. And I think just it's amazing how you can just elevate your performance, you know, just in the moment of a race. Like I exceeded what I thought I was capable of. It was probably my best race just from like a power standpoint.
I've got to say, Brian, that race really redefined my vision of you. You know, because I just see you as this really punchy, out and out sprinter, but you've got a great punch about you. So to see you do what you did on that Bologna climb, it was like, what? What have I just seen? Well, you know, what stood out to me about Brian's performance there and all the other athletes was
if you remember the format, everyone left the line at the same time and there was no draft.
Yeah.
It just kind of, like, I feel like I'm the same way. If I'm racing against somebody, then it's like, it's better than just going on to it, like doing a time trial individually. You know, there's no carrot there for me. Like there's no way I'm going to keep a pace and be able to do that. But if I have somebody to race against, it's a whole different, you know, whole different ball game.
Yeah. And I was intentional for the 2 months prior to that race. I was actually looking at this one day on my Zwift Power, like my past races. I was intentionally in like every community race just getting into breakaways and really trying to just boost my like 20-minute power, because I knew, I couldn't just rely on punchiness for a 14-minute time trial like that. So I think something like 10 or 15 races in a row by 20-minute power in a race was like over 5.4 or something like that. Like I was just kind of really trying to train that kind of system to be ready for this race. Once you got on the climb, I mean, I was with the main contenders who I thought I would be with, which was good, because it was nice to kind of just mark them. And then you had Pucker up the road by 20 seconds. And I was intentional with just trying to mark the others until we got to that really steep part, which is like 16, 17% gradient. And I think that's where David Talbot made a move. And then I was like, all right, I'm all in. And I made a move. And then I wasn't even thinking about Pucker at that point. But then I just kind of like got really tunnel vision, just really myopically focused on just putting out as much power as I could, dropping the guys I was with. And then all of a sudden I was like, wow, I think I'm catching Pucker. And
you know, I just, it was an awesome feeling to be able to bring that one home.
Yeah, so the team was really instrumental in the third race also. They, you know, you didn't win the third one. I believe you came in second, right, in the third one? Yeah, so there was a really tight race between you and Neil there.
Yeah, so the strategy, so I said there's a few guys on race one who are just domestiques and a few in contention. And then obviously race two, everyone can just do whatever they wanted. And then we said after race two, we would see where things stood. And guys who, you know, were then no longer felt like they were in contention were like, hey, we're riding for the team. And even Zach Nair, you know, Zach Nair had a really good chance of podium, but he was like, yeah, no, we're going for the win. He's like, Brian, I'm racing for you this race. And like, that meant a lot because he's an awesome athlete. And really, he got third in race one, did really well in the time trial. I was really tired in race three. I had a whole team supporting me, which is just such an amazing experience, but also an amazing advantage. And we did the math. We had the spreadsheets in the background. So I knew, I think I had to get like fifth maybe. So I was feeling pretty decent about it. But still had to deliver there at the end. And, you know, it's a lot of pressure when you got a whole team supporting you.
I could imagine.
You don't want to let them down. So that in of itself is a huge motivating factor.
So one thing that I've always remarked to Cy about is the, you know, the race was great and the outcome was great. And obviously, you know, the national champion, you're on a high. But then you talk about pressure. A lot of times in these races, there's more pressure after the races than there actually is during the race. You know, it was a really tight fought, you know, race with Neil. And, you know, let's face it, his in real life team came out and made some, you know, not so great comments about you, right? And then there was that weight issue on Swift Power also. So maybe you can kind of talk to that. Sure. And, you know, maybe give us a thought about, you know, how you feel about, you know, the criticism that's within the community. You know, it's almost like a, you know, a community that's divided amongst itself quite frequently. And, you know, and against your team also, because you guys are so successful.
I love e-cycling, but I would say that's probably the biggest negative to the sport has been just some of the toxicity. At times, I think, and I think certainly as I'm not like I'm a bit of an outsider. You know, cyclists don't like triathletes, and I don't have like the formal cycling background, so I'm sure it doesn't always come off that great. Yeah, it's at times it does feel as though that you know, folks try to bring others down, which is, you know, and that's part of our motto at Next. Like, we just want to be positive change agents for the sport, help it grow, raise others up. And, you know, there are certainly times when we have issues with others, but we're not going to be public about that. You know, we'll try to handle them through professional means or back channels, etc., in a, you know, mature way. It's great what the Zada or, you know, IndyVille or whatever they're called now, like the third parties that are essentially trying to verify the sport. You need to have an honest sport for it to be credible, for it to be legitimate. So definitely am in support of everything that they're doing. But it can be really stressful. This was the first time that I was like on the more, like a lot of scrutiny placed on my efforts. But I've, as the one of the leaders of the team and the chief liaison to that group, I've been basically in defense of several of my teammates in the past through Premier Division and through Zwift Grand Prix, where we did do additional verification, or maybe there are some data issues. And it's a stressful process. I do my best to try to support them as they go through those. All the athletes have always been fine. They're just kind of doing their extra due diligence. So yeah, it took about a week for the results to be finalized. It was stressful, especially when you're losing the narrative and people are starting to create rumors. It's never fun to be on that side. I actually kind of forgot about this a little bit, Chris. So thanks for re-raising it.
Well, I think it's significant because, you know, that's a huge, well, not you in particular, but, you know, I think that it's one of the major downfalls of the sport also, is that it seems like the community is always pitted against each other. Yeah. You know, we could go, you know, we could make significant steps forward if everybody was going in the right direction. You know, it seems like there's more, you're trying to bring people down than to try to lift them up.
Yeah, and like you know, the third parties, your data people, they're not really thinking about public communications and things of that nature. So I don't know how much they really care about when things get leaked and sentiment gets out there.
And certainly, I don't think they're really trying to, you know, they're just very factual. It's like, all right, here are the results. They're not releasing information with any kind of narrative associated with it. So that could be a little bit challenging. But essentially what the issue was, it was very, very odd. I had, for the last 2 or 3 years, I've always paired my heart rate via Companion because the native Bluetooth on my laptop is just not really strong. It's usually not strong in in Windows-based like PCs. And then I had some issues with ANT Plus a couple of years ago. So I've always just gone through my Companion on my iPad and tested. And it's a Zwift application. And I think it came back that pairing through Companion, it's actually no longer legal. But since that race, George from IndyVelo was like, it somehow disrupts some data in the back end or something like that. And so when I sent over all my data logs and everything, there was some kind of obscurity there. So they actually, for Zwift Games, in the rule book, it now says, don't pair via Companion, which is kind of hilarious because it's a Zwift application syncing with Zwift software. So
no, I think it's interesting what you say. And we've debated this quite a bit about having this independent body to do the verification and so on. But sometimes when you get a delay in results and you don't get any information, speculation starts. And I think that's also an issue. But I do agree, it's there's got to be a PR part to that lesson as well, I think, at some point. Well, you mentioned Zwift Games there, which is obviously going on right now. I had you as one of the favorites with a Zwift Games sprint. It's not that I want to keep bringing up these negative things, Brian.
No, that's all right.
But it didn't go your way, I think it's fair to say.
No, I was. It was a tough weekend. I was a little dejected. I was really excited for the race. Didn't do quite as well as I was hoping. Did pretty well race one. You know, not that it really mattered, but I was second there. Just really needed to get a top 30. I knew that one was going to be chaotic. Just because he had like 150 people all sprinting simultaneously. I had a sense it was going to go early, which it did, which was good for me. Race two, I think, just played out very, and even race three from my observations, just played out very differently than how I was anticipating them. I thought the races would be a lot harder. Race two would be a lot harder. There was not really any differentiation or separation. And I'm just naturally a more aggressive rider. And I just assumed... because there were 10 qualifiers, that a break would probably get away. Because, you know, if a few people get away, it's like, there's still 7 more spots. Like, people would just kind of back off. Everybody was, like, very jumpy. And unfortunately, I think it just burned a little too many matches early on, just trying to get into a break or responding to some others when I probably didn't have to because somebody else would have. And then toward the end, I responded to a move that went about a half mile out or like a little less than a kilometer out, 800 meters. And I think that, and as soon as I started responding, I was like, everybody's coming. So I backed off, but I think I just spent a little bit too much energy to be able to get myself back in contention for a top 10 there. You know, it's the caliber of all the athletes was so high. So unfortunately didn't get it, but yeah, we Tom and James advance, which is awesome, and you know they did well in the third race. So I'm looking forward to the epic race this upcoming weekend. I think it's another course that on paper could suit me well, but I think it suits a lot of athletes well. So you know, in these races, it's there's a lot of just making the right move at the right time, having the right tactics, the right strategy. Luck does play a factor. So you do have to have a decent amount of things go your way.
Yeah, so we, you know, this was obviously the sprint championship, right?
Yeah.
So I want to get a sense, you sort of the format. Now, you mentioned that the first race was chaotic. I know originally they were planning for qualifications and they went away from that. I want to get your sense, you know, was this a sprint championship? Would you think of the format, the three-race format? Did you feel that, you know, it was different than what you've raced in the past? So could things have made this, you know, more of a sprint championship?
Yeah, I guess it's a little bit in the eye of the beholder as to what does a sprint championship mean and what is your expectation for it. I don't know what the right sprint championship looks like, but I did like that it wasn't just a one race sit and sprint kind of thing. I like that there were, maybe I'm getting a little selfish here because I'm not a big guy. I'm a decent sprinter, but I'm not going to out sprint like, you know, some of the pure sprinters out there. So I would vouch for something that's harder or repeat it. So the three race format I liked, and it was comparable to how Worlds was last year. I mean, exactly the same, you know, top 30 events, then top 10. So I actually like that format. It was more so I might be coming at this from a different direction than you, Chris, because it sounds like you thought it should be more of like a proper sprint. But I was hoping the courses would be a little bit harder. They did have a KOM in there, a couple KOMs here and there, but it wasn't really doing much to differentiate. And part of that might have been the fact that races 1 and 3, the power-up was a draft. I thought that was an interesting choice. If you're going to use a power-up, I think there's other ones that you can do to spruce it up. Say the day, it's entertainment. You don't want to just see a peloton riding together for 20, 25 minutes and then all sprinting at the end. If that's going to be the case, you might as well just shorten the race. So I love the ghost because it just it incites aggressive behaviors and gambles, which I like.
Yeah, I think in particular in that last race for me, the draft was a little bit of a negative power-up. You know,
yeah.
And we saw that in particular in the ladies' final, where that draft was just neutralizing. What's her name? The lady who was rode away on the first two races.
Oh, yeah.
Belfour.
Yes.
Belfour.
Yeah. Belfour.
Yeah.
You know, and it really neutralized because it brought her back and riders were all winning through. But it's an interesting discussion because I had lots of different discussions with different elites and also the community, and Chris and I, you debated it on this, whether it was a sprint final, and ultimately we're still trying to evolve what finals should look like, you know, and should we have a climb in the middle of a sprint championship, question mark. But it sounds like you really focused on the epic now.
Yeah, getting my head ready for that, so that'll be exciting. We'll have a good squad out there again.
Yeah, I guess next approaching this in the same way then. Have you selected athletes to go for different championships?
Yeah, the conversation has started up. It's not like one athlete for a championship, but we'll get the game plan mapped out by Saturday. I know conversation's already started. I gotta tune in to see where things stand at this point. I haven't reconned the course yet, but you know, it's in Watopia, so I'm generally well versed. I do like to finish, you know, on the climb there, on the forward KOM, I believe, which is good. That one's tricky. It's, you know, like in all finishes, timing really matters, but that one is a tough one to get right. But I think the general sentiment on our team is we hope that it is a little bit more aggressive and harder, and you know, to the extent we can do our part to make that happen, I think we certainly will.
All right, I've got to move us on. Subjects here. So we're talking to the US national champion. We've just talked about the Zwift Games, but obviously Zwifts are no longer the hosts of the UCI Esports Cycling World Championships. Uh-huh. So where's that with you? You know, are you going to be getting over to MyWish? Is that a focus? Because if I looked at the format, I said this to Chris in pre-show, that I actually think this format could work for you.
Yeah. You might have to remind me of what the format is.
You've obviously put a ton of thought into this.
Yeah. I did see when the press release came out. I've been focused on, like, you know, so it was Nationals, then we were wrapping up Zwift Grand Prix. We were, next was in contention there in the last race. It was actually really exciting between us and A-Bus. And they got us by like one place. It was crazy how close it was there. And then, you know, attention shifted towards Zwift Games. So once we get through this, I'll start thinking about Worlds more. I was a little bummed, though, that Zwift didn't win it. I mean, I've been more or less a Zwift purist. I'm, you know, obviously very used to the platform, the dynamics, the different courses. So it will take some time for me to learn my whoosh. I did, like, one or two of the races a couple years ago, the Sunday races. It was just so totally different and distinct. And even, like, the race formats, at least in those races, were just very different. So I haven't done them since then, essentially. The timing of the World Championships is a little odd as well, just being in October. Like, that's kind of the start of the season for e-cycling.
So it's going to be a bit different. I know personally, like the fitness I'm in October versus January, February is night and day. So it's going to require a different approach over the summer to prepare for that. But I do think, side to your point, the format will probably be anything that is like multiple kind of stages or events, shorter, punchier efforts, I think on paper would be a little bit better for me.
So you're going to be doing some racing over there then soon?
Yeah. My understanding though is they're coming out with a new drafting algorithm or like physics algorithm. So it'll probably be most relevant to race on there once that comes out, unless it already has. But yeah, I'll have to start shifting my attention over there over the next several months just to get used to it, because it is very important. You know, you have to learn the craft. You have to learn the timing and, you know, when to make certain moves. So
doesn't sound like you're that enthusiastic about doing that.
Well, it's, you know, I think a lot, an in-person event will be really cool. And I get it. It's like, you know, it's, you can truly ensure valid performances and things of that nature. What drew me to the sport initially was, heck, I can go in my basement and race against guys in Belgium, Australia, South America, all in the comforts of my own home, all simultaneously around the world. That's so cool. You're not limited to your local population. So, you know, certainly given how far away the event is, personally, it's like a busy time of year for me at work. So I think the logistics are going to be a lot more challenging to manage. All else being equal, I'd probably prefer to just do it in my house. Just a lot more straightforward and easy. But yeah, it's a world championship, so it's awesome. It's the pinnacle of the sport, so I'm definitely going to put my do everything I can to be ready for it.
So you mentioned it's the pinnacle of the sport. You said it's the world championships, emphatically, right? Cy and myself had the opportunity to speak with the director of esports for Zwift, Sean Parry, and he made no bones about the fact that the Zwift Games overall championship is their response to the world championships, right? This is kind of unfair because one race is already gone and you're kind of out of it for the overall. But we asked this question of Zach, and I plan on asking it of every athlete that comes on. If you had a chance to only win one more race in your life, would it be the world championships or the Zwift overall championship?
The world championship, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it's UCI sanctions. You get the rainbow kit. I think it just has, you know, a little bit more global credibility than a platform-specific championship. That being said, I think the Zwift Games is awesome. I'm glad they're doing it, and it's really bringing out the best athletes. But yeah, I would say if you're framing the question in that way, just from a pure prestige and recognition standpoint, I think it would be hard to dispute a UCI-sanctioned world championship.
Yeah, I agree. And we've debated this before, Chris, but I think both platforms, we're seeing developments. You know, I've seen an improvement with, you know, the broadcast of the Zwift Games lately. The fact that they were bringing the athletes in on screen, but also involving the athletes in the commentary, I think really added to it. So hopefully that continues, that progress. And Brian, I hope that you continue to progress as an athlete and an absolutely awesome ambassador for cycling esports that both, not just you as an individual, but Next as a team as well are doing. So really appreciate you joining us on the show today. I hope we can get you back soon after the Zwift Games as we get to, well, it sounds like you're going to be training through the summer to focus on the UCI Cycling Esports World Championships this time. But really appreciate your time today, and thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Brian. It was great. See you.
All right, that was a great recording there, Chris, with Brian. I just want to give the listeners some context because you may hear some ambient noise because we decided to get out here in the Mecca. We're down in Long Beach just grabbing I've had a chocolate croissant and a macchiato. You've joined me with the macchiato, but you bailed on the chocolate croissant and passed it to Connor. But we've just come down to Long Beach. Just want to have a quick chat about some of the things he said there, Chris, and there's some of the news that we got to talk about, I guess, as well, that's happening in the industry. First of all, I just want to jump back to what he was saying about the Zwift Games, because I do agree. I think what we've seen in the Zwift Games so far has been really good. I thought, you know, as I mentioned before, the broadcast has been good. I like this the additional data screens that they've bought in as well, the secondary screen with that additional data in there for us.
Yes, absolutely.
Data nerds in there, I thought was really fantastic. The other thing, I'm just thinking commercially, literally just popped into my brain here, but of course they have bought in these additional sponsors as well with Oakley and Adidas. And you and I are always talking about commercializing the sport, both from, you know, the athletes. Some of those top athletes are out there earning money on MyWish, for example, you know, and earning a living from it. But now, you know, Zwift with the Zwift Games have managed to bring in some, I won't say non-traditional cycling brands, because they're clearly both got, you know, roots in cycling, particularly Oakley, I guess. But also that's that next step in being able to commercialize cycling esports.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of very positive things that came out of the Sprint Championship for the Zwift Games. First of all, that start list for the men and the women was a who's who of cycling. You had 180 guys, you know, 60 plus girls rocking up for this race. And it was, you know, all the big names, plus a whole bunch of up-and-comers, some people you'd never heard before that put in some pretty amazing performances. So the riders showed up. They showed out for this. The endemic sponsors is a big thing. That's the first for Zwift for this kind of racing. I think that's huge. And the broadcast was, after I watched it, the first thing that came to mind was that was a compelling and entertaining show, right? So, you know, that's all great for the sport. We're moving forward. The formats, the functionality, the other things that are the backbone, the foundation here, are the things that we would like to see forward, moving forward. And when we talk about the other platforms, those are the things that are going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing we've got to talk about as well is this thing that keeps coming up, and we touched upon it there with that discussion, is the verification of riders. Because it feels at the moment that riders, team managers, people involved in the sport are taking it into their own hands. And I think that a little bit of that happens because sometimes what's happening from a verification point of view is too silent. You know, it's understanding exactly what is happening, understanding exactly where the boundaries are in terms of accuracy between those two sources, just as an example, because of course we've got to talk about Kaminsky, Michael Kaminsky, because that also, there was some controversy and some discussion going on social media about his numbers.
Right. Yeah. Well, I wanted to bring that up with Brian because, you know, next, the way that they handle things, they always try to, in my opinion, try to be above board. And, you know, the sport is in a place where I really feel that the community is divided amongst itself. Like they're constantly, there's always something, there's always some sort of controversy going on. And a lot of that is because, you know, that's the state that we're in. That's the culture that we're in. There is not an accountability on the platform's part to take care of that. Whether you're pulling in the third party to be the communicator there, in my opinion, they aren't the ones that should be doing the communication. Right, so we'll talk about Michael Kaminsky, you know, a very prominent member of the community, made some really challenging statements towards him. So I asked some people who know a lot more about this stuff than I do, right? And they sifted through the data, and you know, they took some time before reacting and, you know, putting up a knee-jerk response to this. And they, you know, they really couldn't see anything significantly out of the ordinary as far as being, you know, like as far as, you know, let's just say it, cheating, right? There were some technical issues, maybe some power smoothing, but they didn't really see any blatant attempts to cheat. And the other thing about Michael, right, we know that he went to Abu Dhabi, he proved his numbers there, whether you like the way that they formatted that or not, he did go do it. It wasn't like he shied away from it, right? He's always been open. You know, so when you're talking about cheating, when you're talking about, you know, being called out in the community, is it fair to somebody who's, you know, always been open with his, it's not like he has a closed Strava or anything like that.
Yeah,
you know, intent comes into this, right? And you also, you know, have to think about, you know, if we're all in this together, and to be calling out somebody like that, I'm sure he was miserable. Like usually, you know, when I reach out to a racer like Michael, or he gets back to me, Chris, what do you want? You know, maybe we can talk about this. He was radio silent. I could just imagine the way that this whole thing, you know, it should have been like one of the greatest, you know, achievements of his, you know, short esports career, but turned out to being a nightmare for him.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting what you say there about whether the independent verifying body, IndyVelo in this case, or Zwift should be making those communications. I'm with you. I think those communications ultimately need to become from the platform themselves. And I think, you know, we've seen the difficulty I had. I said this to you, you know, in pre-production, I've said this to you before, that the silence is the problem. When there's a long gap between a race or an event, when there's a question mark, and then any form of communication from either the platform or the verifying body, that's when things start to happen. That's what we saw with USA National Championships. We had a long time between that race that happened over the weekend and when we got the final results. And we know there were other things happening there with other athletes. And, you know, I know it's not just the winner that they need to be verifying, but it's other aspects too. But I agree, it's, the responsibility has got to be on the platform to make those announcements and make those ultimate decisions, I guess.
Yeah, so when you're talking about the platforms, we've seen, you know, the Zwift Games, the format, whether you like it, whether you think it's what it was compelling watching. I certainly did. But the fact of the matter is it was nothing new, right? We've seen that format before. There hasn't been any enhancements or innovations that would have made it so. So we'll talk about the other platforms.
Well, that leads me on to, you obviously were on that press conference when Zwift lost essentially the UCI World Championships. And you were on that call with Mark Cote from Zwift. And I remember specifically you said to me that Mark said they're going to be doubling down on competition and the elite side or the competitive side of cycling esports. You know, the question now, we got to be, what, 6 months on, maybe less from that decision. Are we seeing that?
Well, that's interesting because one of the things that they mentioned there also was the Zwift Racing score, right? We're going to have some results-based categorization. You know, unfortunately, the person who was heading that up is no longer with the company. So, you know, where is that, right? And then we see other platforms like IndieVelo. Like, you can go on IndieVelo now, and as a user, you can create an event, and you can customize the points arches. You can customize everything and create your own points race and a points race series. And there's so much functionality there. And as you're racing, the points tabulate in front of you. You can see it, you know, almost instantaneously.
Yeah.
Right, and they have now real-time performance verification. If your trainer is not calibrated correctly, you get a message saying you need to calibrate your trainer. And if you're in the middle of a race and your hardware isn't working correctly, or if you're, you know, if you're not performing in a way that's realistic, you get booted from the race.
Yeah, and we know, you know, we've had that discussion before, that when you wait till a race is finished, those guys have already had an impact. Well, you know, we've seen lots of races this last year at that elite level when there's been a question mark for one reason or another, you know, and ultimately, you know, we see it every Tuesday in the ZRL races that something happened within a ZRL, but the problem is it's too late because their impacts, they've already impacted the game. You know, we had the discussion with the ladies in the USA National Championships. You know, there was an athlete there who arguably impacted the end result in that points race format. So, absolutely, that's something we have to come. But, you know, the other thing is just in terms of that gamification as well, I really enjoyed the Zwift Games and what we've seen so far, but it's still an issue. And I know it's an issue with the broadcast of the other events as well, you know, that Nathan do and the Zwift Community Live people, that you can't, you know, Nathan has vocalized his frustration that you can't get live updates on points on a Tuesday night with ZRL. So how can the sport move on and innovate? Because that's what we're talking about, you know, when look at racing moving forward. How can the event organizers, the people who are doing the elite side of racing with Zwift, really innovate if they don't have the tools to do that? And now I question, what are those tools going to be provided to, first of all, their in-house team, and secondly, race organizers, for example, to be able to innovate the formats? And, you know, like the innovative format that I think we're going to be seeing on My Wish, you know, with the UCI World Champs.
You know, I agree with you, but we have to take a step back and give credit where it's due, right? The broadcast was absolutely significantly better than it was for, you know, as the Grand Prix went on, it evolved and it got better and better. The DSs involved, you know, Adam, I thought was fabulous. Carlo was fabulous. You know, that perspective was what's needed there to humanize, right? We speak about that. The separate data screen, you know, the options and the potential for that are endless. I could just see, you know, we got wobbles, we got everything showing up there, and you get a real sense that, you know, that's what esports has that available. We're all data nerds, and being able to check out that data in real time while the race is going on, I think was a significant enhancement. There's so many different ways that you can go with that.
Yeah.
But you have to have the foundation there in order to build upon that. And that's one of the things that, you know, let's be fair, we haven't seen much doubling down on racing.
Well, hopefully it's coming. You know, we know we're down here, as I've said, in Los Angeles, and we know that there's board meetings going on right now with Swift, and it'd be interesting to see what comes out of those meetings and what happens as they sort of get into their new year, because essentially they're driven by investors, right? So that'd be really interesting. Let's move it on a bit. Now, of course, some of those athletes in the Zwift Games also compete every week in the Sunday Race Club over on MyWish. You know, Emma Belforth, for example, you know, the outstanding athlete, I would say, although she didn't eventually win the sprint championships, the performance she put in those first two races was absolutely standout. And of course, she raced the Sunday Race Club, maybe even the same morning.
It was a few hours before. Yeah, and she won that race also. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, I had never heard of her prior to these races.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, please forgive me, Emma, because you're obviously a huge talent. But it just, you know, when I looked at the different start sheets for the races, and I went back, you know, obviously, Wina Vuyasin, Ali Jones, the world champion, Bjorn Andreessen, Vidar Mell, they all raced the Sunday Race Club after the Zwift Games.
Yeah.
And you know, I'd be interested to see, you know, which race they're prioritizing. And we're going to have Ali and Leo on for the next podcast, so I intend on asking them that. But then you have racers like Celine Colombi. She raced in the Sunday Race Club, and she was very much involved in the Zwift Grand Prix. I didn't see her racing during the Women's Sprint Championship. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. Although the winner, Katherine Fuhrer, she usually races Sunday Race Club, and she didn't.
Yeah,
and she went away with the crown there, the gold Tron bike, which was a tremendous performance for her. So it's, you know, this multi-platform landscape is so interesting to me, because it's one of these ways where, you know, you can really diversify esports. And you know, we have a platform like MyMush. They're experimenting with real-time verification now also. And I spoke to the people over there, and they're trying to figure out how to do it in a way where they can basically they can take you out of the race if your hardware isn't, you know, compatible, if there was some kind of a glitch, but have you still complete the race but not actually impact the race.
Yeah.
So you can still finish, you can still get a workout in, even though you're not, you know, you want to impact what's going on with the other racers, that if they're trying to win a race and make some money. So it's interesting with the way things are going.
No, absolutely. I think we've said it before, we've had this discussion before. I think having two platforms in this space, I know there are more platforms, but right at the moment there's two that are really leading the competitive side, and they are bringing investment in the sport. You know, we saw the biggest cash prize pot with the Zwift Games that we've seen on that platform. Mm-hmm. MyWish, of course, are investing every single Sunday across all categories with their Sunday Race Club. And we know that some of these elite athletes, this is their job now. And I don't think we could have said the same thing 12 months ago, you know, or even 6 months ago when we were sat down having this discussion. So, you know, it really has moved on. But talking about MyWish, you've mentioned there, they've obviously got the real-time verification to boot riders out. There's quite a bit going on there as well. So, you know, those guys have really stepped up. I mean, and again, this is something we also said, you know, 12 months ago when MyWish really burst onto the scene, as they couldn't just match what Zwift were doing. They've got to be able to push the boundaries, and hopefully each platform continues to push each other. But of course, we've started to see, I race Sunday Race Club every Sunday. We've got to talk about, the question that comes up is also the dynamics, you know, right. and that's come up with, you know, the interview that we've just done there with Brian Duffy Jr. And I do believe that there was a bit of a release. There's a little bit of a lag, admittedly, that when I put the power down, when I'm racing on that platform, the experience of what you see with your avatar on screen. I think you'd said that we're probably not going to expect to see any changes in the draft, but I think there's a very good reason why. Maybe you can give us your insights on that.
Yeah, so when I was over in Abu Dhabi with the MyWish folks, I was shown who was in charge of their physics. And I wanted, you know, that's the guy that I wanted to meet with. So he and I had a lunch together, and I was picking his brain about where they're going. And every single critical comment that I made about the physics, because, you know, it's not the same as Zwift. And I think the physics on Zwift is fabulous, right? I don't think it's at the Indie Velo level, but I think it's, you know, for racing, I think it's great. And I, you know, I haven't raced as much on MyWish as you have, but, you know, we've discussed that. They tell me that they have certain things in mind, but they're not going to be making any wholesale changes. They're going to just be phasing things in, you know, little by little, for the reason that Brian said, right? He said that he's not going to race there because they're going to be changing everything up. And why would he do that if he's got to relearn everything? Yeah. That's not the way it's going
to be. Exactly the reason why they're not going to change
exactly.
it too much.
Exactly. They're very aware of the fact that that's unfair to the racers. That if they're going to do anything before the World Championships, it's going to be, you know, small incremental changes that over a period of time might be big changes, but the racers will be able to accommodate and to adapt to it.
Yeah. I tell you what, Chris, it is bustling down here. It's pretty busy. Hopefully the listeners are getting the audio loud and clear. Now, the next show is coming up. This is going to be episode
39
that we've done. We're flying through these episodes. And of course, we've got Lionel Vuillasan and Ollie Jones on the next show as well to come and talk about. And obviously, they were over at My Wish as well, doing some testing as well. So it'd be great to speak to those athletes about that. I'm also really interested because, of course, Ollie Jones was the first winner of the Zwift Academy back in the day as well. So he's obviously been utilizing the Zwift platform. We know that, you know, I consider Lionel Vuillasan to be the GOAT. He's one of the original Zwift All-Stars, but of course he's racing across multiple platforms. So I think that could be a really exciting and interesting podcast.
It might be also very exciting because, I don't know if you remember, but Ollie Jones got booted out of the Zwift race. He had an equipment malfunction.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah,
he wasn't all too happy about the way things went there. But we know that these things happen, right? And I don't know if you realize it, Si, but it's raining outside the cafe here.
I've noticed. But yeah, so that's coming up soon. That's episode 39. If you want to understand or learn a bit more about what we've been doing in Los Angeles and particularly down here in Long Beach, as I said, we have got some big announcements coming up. Don't forget to go and follow us on those social media channels. Don't forget to go and subscribe over on thezamunak.com. And we will see you very soon for episode 39 of the Virtual Velo Podcast.